With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vincent Joe.
Hi, I'm Kathy Reed.
And I'm Allison Reed.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
Hi, I'm Grace.
We're from the Haydenettes.
I am Mark Henretti.
Ciao a tutti, siamo Rebecca Ghirardi.
E Filippa Ambrosini.
E vi diamo il benvenuto a
This Week in Skating.
Welcome to This Week in Skating, the weekly podcast bringing you the latest news from the world of figure skating. Here are your hosts, Daphne, Gina, and Matteo.
Our guest today doesn't need an introduction, really, as we have introduced him three times on this podcast before. He's been on the podcast more times than any other guest we have had on.
And I'm sure our listeners know who he is. We are excited to welcome back for his fourth time on This Week in Skating, our good friend and Olympic gold medalist, Vincent Joe.
Hi, Vincent.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the introduction. It's so great to be back. I know it's only been a few months since we saw each other at Worlds, which, you know, what a wonderful surprise, by the way. That was literally like a few minutes before the bus came. It was a great way to cap it off.
It was.
Actually, I wanted you to share the story from your viewpoint, because we shared it on the podcast from my viewpoint, but tell our listeners what actually happened at work.
Okay, so I go to school in Providence, and the World Championships last year, as many of you know, were in Boston. So, and this is actually at the very end of spring break, so I had just come back from Poland the night before, and US Figure Skating had asked me to do an event at the practice rink in the morning. Went there, you know, it was great, and then was able to spectate the men's free and the ice dance free. And then at the end of the night, as I was about to leave, you know, I was standing there waiting for the bus, and I looked to my right, and it's Gina. And she's like Vincent. I'm like, and it was the most unexpected encounter ever. And we weren't sure when the bus was going to leave. It was supposed to leave in like 3 minutes. And so Gina was like, you should go and say hi to Daphne. She's upstairs in like the media room. And then we ran up there, you know, trying to beat the clock before the bus left. And we finally saw each other in person after.
Yeah, a couple of years. I just remember getting the text messages. Don't leave. Stay where you are. Like, what is going on?
And then you were in the bathroom when I got there, and I got panicked that you did leave. Yeah. And I'm like, no, where is she? But the bus did not leave either. Vincent got on the bus.
We had a police escort on the way back. It was not for me.
No, it was so cool to get to meet you in person, and it was very, very quick, but we were able to get a picture and at least say hello, so it was awesome. Was not expected because it was the end of the event. I was packing up. We were just going to be leaving.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, being at Worlds was kind of unexpected, I think, because I went more as like a spectator with my friends from school. Like I literally brought along like five friends from school, and we just, you know, it was really funny. We were sitting in the audience, and my friends were asking me stuff about, you know, about this skater, about that skater. And then some of the people sitting in front of us, they kept turning around. They're like, "Wow, this guy sounds really knowledgeable. like who is he?" Yeah, got recognized eventually. It was really fun.
Can't hide at a skating competition, not with fans that know.
Yeah, but it was really fun. It was really fun getting to be on the other side of the boards and have a bit of a different experience and just sort of fly a little bit undercover. It was lots of fun.
So, what did your friends think?
Oh, they loved it. They loved it. They're all big fans. I think they have a slightly skewed perception of me. I mean, if you're in skating, it's like, oh, cool, it's Vincent Zhou, you know. I think if you're not in skating, it's like, holy, you're a figure skater, like that's so cool. So they were all really excited to be there, and it was an awesome experience for everyone. It was great for me to return to the rink. I think, you know, spending a lot of time outside of the skating world nowadays, or I say 99.8% of my time outside of the skating world nowadays. So it's nice to get back into it a little.
Yeah, we like to pull you back in just a little bit.
Yeah. Now, this podcast is my anchor.
So what did you think of the actual skating?
Oh, it was stunning. Like, men's figure skating, I mean, I'm not as qualified to opine on ice dance, so I will opine on men's. men's skating has definitely come a long way. I mean, it's pretty crazy to see how creative people are getting. I can barely keep up with the rule changes they're doing every year. And even though I'm on the singles developmental and technical committee for US figure skating, I still can hardly keep up with all the rule changes that are happening. And there's also a bit of, I don't want to say a misalignment, but it can be difficult to keep the domestic rule pipeline in track with the international rule pipeline, with the ISU rule pipeline. So it's a little bit like apples to oranges sometimes, but Ilya was insane. Actually, I think Shaidarov, his free skate was my favorite of the night. I mean, that moment was just absolutely incredible.
It's been a lot of fun to watch him this season because he is just, yeah, he's grown so much and he's still young and potential's there. It's been a lot of fun.
Right. I mean, I think I started freaking out like audibly when he did the triple axel Euler quad sal. And my friends were kind of a little bit confused because they were like, oh, fast twirls, you know?
And I was like, Allie,
I need to give you context for this. This is a historic moment in men's figure skating.
It is. Yeah. We've been watching that. I mean, when he first started doing it, it was just like, what? How the heck do you... not something I had on any bingo card for figure skating.
I mean, seeing it in competition, like trying it in practice slash seeing it in practice is one thing. Seeing it pulled out at a world championships is a completely different thing.
Yeah, it's...
And in such an epic context, too. I mean, like, talk about chills. Talk about incredible. Like, that was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I'm sure you preferred being on the other side of the boards instead of competing against those two with their quads and their backflips and everything else they're throwing out there.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. When actually like in the field, you don't really pay too much attention. I don't want to speak for everyone, but at least from my perspective, you don't really pay that much attention to what other people are doing because it's not that helpful. Like going into the season, you have a general sense of, okay, this is where these skaters are. This is what my strategy should be accordingly. But it's not like I'm going to analyze their game plan for each competition and then make adjustments based on that. I think that's a little bit much for the general culture / general practice that we currently have in figure skating. So I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the sport will reach that point in the future. But
I think it would scramble my brain, like if I was trying to think like that. And that, if you do that, you're not paying attention to yourself. and what you need right. to be doing. And it takes you out of your own focal points and focus on you and what you need to do.
Right.
But I can imagine maybe some people do get obsessed or think a lot about what other people are doing. But you can, at the end of the day, you can only do what you can do. You can't, you have no control over any of that. You don't have control over the judges. You have control over what you're able to accomplish. And that's it.
Right. Right. As we've parroted to the media a million times, anytime they try to ask us controversial questions.
But it's true. And I think the more time I've been involved in this sport and I've talked to people and been to competitions and seen how things go, I mean, yeah, I guess you could go down the rabbit hole of worrying about everybody else and what the judges are going to do, but you really can't do anything. Like, you go out there and perform, and that's what you can do.
Yeah. I think there's both pros and cons to having like a purely like focus on your own game type of approach, because on one hand, you know, it helps you focus on your own game. Roll credits. On the other hand, it's easy for someone who's really perfectionistic or overthinks a lot to get into their own head. And if you, it's kind of like, you know, a person who thinks all the time has nothing to think about except thought, right? It's like you start to get way too mechanical with how you approach things instead of just letting things flow, just letting it be automatic out there.
Yeah.
That's something that I struggle with a lot. I'm sure I'm not the only one. You know, a lot of my friends also, you know, overthink a lot in competition. The mental game is so important. And sometimes having a more flexible, adaptable mindset where it's not like you're filtering out all the external stimuli. It's like you're allowing some external stimuli to filter through, and you're processing and accepting them and just letting them flow through without latching on to any one of them in particular. And sometimes like that can be a more helpful MO in competitions. So who are your favorites?
So many.
Well, I will talk about, since you weren't talking about dance and you did get to see dance. I know, I think we may have chatted and said that the highlight for dance was Olivia Smart and Tim Dee.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mean, for them to come out and do that Dune program, that for me was the highlight. So you're just asking, I'm going to go back to dance and say that was the highlight that day for me. Of course, Alyssa Liu, you know, the day before or 2 days before, I can't remember the schedule, but, you know, her coming out and winning a world title that she wasn't even competing the year prior.
It was great.
So those were the highlights, I think, for me. It seems, it's like so long ago.
It's only
now,
been a couple of months.
I know, but it seems so
long.
I think partially because of the looming Olympic season ahead, everyone's focused on that. It makes the past world seem a little bit further away. But
I'm just going to say that Boston did a really good job. I mean, the fact that that arena, you were there on Saturday, so you saw that it was packed, but it was packed the whole entire time, loud. I was there in 2016, and I don't remember it being as crazy and upbeat and loud and as it was. Oh, it was, I guess, because I'm remembering now Ashley Wagner, but just the crowd in 2025 was, it was, you know, it was just awesome. Awesome vibe. I wish you got an opportunity. You never got an opportunity to compete in a home world, right?
I don't think so.
It's a different beast, I think, to be in front of a home audience and have maybe additional pressure because it's, you know, your country. And we were really lucky. We had Montreal the year before. So we had like back-to-back worlds in North America. So we're pretty lucky to be able to go.
I mean, we had two nationals in San Jose, which has been, and then they've both been in Olympic year, which is also really interesting.
I really expected 2026 was going to be in San Jose. Like, honestly, I was expecting
it. Yeah, why not?
Because it's always, it always is out there.
Yeah, the psychological game around a home competition is really interesting. I think some people work with the pressure really well. Some people feel like they aren't working with it well, but it's still subconsciously pushing them along and giving them that extra bit that they didn't know they had. And it's really interesting. I mean, I've been watching a lot of table tennis recently, and there's a Swedish player called Truls Morgard who actually just defeated the world number one seed in his hometown world table tennis championships or World Cup. I don't know. It's the competition's called Europe Smash, but it's like a huge, huge tournament. Mm-hmm. And people are calling it like one of the greatest, you know, finals matches of all time. I mean, Truls, I think last year he was like world rank 24 or something, but like even the difference between world rank 24 and one is massive. I could be lying. Maybe it was 12, maybe it was, but the difference is massive, you know. That's like a group two or three skater coming out and winning world championships. I mean, it's just nuts. And it was home crowd, home audience. He didn't really like change too much about himself or how he played, but every characteristic of his game, of his play style was just, you know, tuned up to the nines that day. And I definitely was a home crowd or like a hometown kind of mental tailwind, I would say.
There, I think it's possible too. People could thrive on being in that environment and it just fuels them even more. They're just like, oh, charged. But you also have to harness that energy and you don't want to like overcompensate or overperform.
Right.
Because that can take you out of it. And table tennis to me seems like it's technical. Like you've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like skating. There's so much mm-hmm. finesse.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of power behind it and a lot of technique, but there's also so much finesse where if you're getting too up in your head about it, then everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
Can't be mechanical. You have to be like automatic. Mm-hmm. You gotta let things flow.
You have to be ready for whatever comes. Like wherever that ball's going, you gotta know so that you can hit it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Sometimes in competition, even though it's our body out there, it still doesn't feel like you're in control of it. And sometimes like I don't know, when I get really nervous, sometimes it feels like I'm reacting to what my body is doing. If you have to react to what your body's doing in a sport that takes, you know, that depends on like milliseconds, it's already too late.
Yeah.
So the mental game is so critical out there.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's underestimated the amount of dealing with the mental piece of it, like how much that plays into it, because there's a lot more talk about muscle memory and trust your training. But I think your brain and being able to harness everything and push through, there's a lot more for that. In addition to like mental focus, but like mental health has also become a little more common to talk about, which I'm happy about because I feel like that's another piece of the puzzle that you have to look at and focus on, because you can spiral very easily if you get a bad performance and another bad performance or a problem or an injury, all these different things that contribute to your mind, just mental and emotional health, just going off the rails. And I'm glad that it's become a much more common thing for people to talk about.
Yeah, teaching kids how to cope with high expectations and how to deal with inevitable failure is really important, because if you raise them with the mindset that they can never fail, otherwise the world is ending, or there's some sort of trauma tied to failing, it's really bad when you inevitably will fail later in your career.
Yeah. That's-
It's such a tough balance between how you teach kids to deal with high expectations, high pressure, and also how you give them the foundation to be able to be happy and recognize their own achievements later in life. But then at the same time, if they want to make it somewhere in the sport, they have to hold themselves to a high standard. Mm-hmm. It's such a difficult balance.
Right.
Such a difficult balance.
Yeah. And the expectation, I mean, Gina and I've talked about this before on the podcast, that on the journey to where you're going in whatever sport you're doing, sometimes those disappointments or not reaching the goal in that particular competition, I don't know about you, Vincent, but some of my best life lessons have been when I've screwed up or made mistakes or not met my expectation. Like, I use that as an opportunity to self-reflect and say, okay, you know what? I need to do something different. Those are learning moments, I think.
Yeah, I mean, everything's a scientific experiment. Mm-hmm. Whichever way the signal goes, that it still tells you something about the ingredients or the procedure that went in.
Yeah.
Just accordingly.
Yeah.
That's the growth mindset that I'm sure every champion ever has adopted and embodied.
Yeah. We've also talked about celebrating not only the ones who get like the top three, of course, it's amazing. But in watching the sport, you start to get to know who the athletes are, and they may not win that competition, but if they finish ninth and that's the highest they've ever been at a Worlds or an international, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so easy to reduce most things in life down to, okay, who's the best at this? And then only focus on that. And compare yourself or compare others to that relative standard. But honestly, it's like a pretty childish mindset, I would say, because when you're a kid, of course, you're told that everything is black and white. You know, you're told that there is a clear good and a bad. You're told that, you know, that it's like whoever's number one is number one, if number two, number two, a 100 is 100, a 97 is a 97. And so on. But the older you get, the less those hard numbers matter. And the more carving out your own niche and specializing in that and being passionate about it, the more that matters.
There's
so many different roads to being a successful figure skating or being a successful anything in life. And that's something I wish I learned sooner. It's definitely something that I hadn't learned even by the time I was, I was competing for the last time at 2022 Worlds, I still hadn't learned that yet. I mean, it's difficult, right? Yeah. When you're entrenched in it, of course, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes you have to get to the other side of something to understand all the lessons that you learned, because you can apply it outside of that. And we've had guests on the podcast who have talked about how skating has helped them beyond skating, like in other parts of their lives.
The other thing I learned is that it's like chasing an endlessly moving target. If you try to if what makes you special is that if the only thing that makes you special, or the only thing you define how special you are by, is whether you're number one or whatever high result you achieve, you specialize in something that you are special in. And that's like, for example, Junhuan Cha with his gorgeous choreo step sequences, or Jason Brown with how he interprets music, or Adam Xiaohim Fa with his athleticism and his signature moves, right? That's how you specialize. Because growing up, I always, for some reason, I had this mindset of if I just win, I'll be special. Like, everyone wants to be special, right? Okay. I wanted to be special. You wanted to be special.
Always, right?
And I was like, okay, if I just win this competition, I'll be special, right? And to an extent it's true until the next competition comes around, right?
That's true.
But then the more you think about just figure skating and who fans love and who's remembered, right? There, of course, the legends who always won everything are remembered. But beyond that, fan favorites are often the people who aren't necessarily winning everything, but the people who have specialized in something other than winning and made something huge out of that.
Yeah. They do something so that makes people enjoy them, not because they land a quad, but because of some, it can be something else. Spins, or like you said, with Cha's footwork. Those are the things that stand out. And some skaters that are not even like in the top three at Worlds have huge fan bases because the fans gravitate towards something that they do that just they're hooked. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I would say as a kid, I was super competitive and perfectionistic and intense and could never understand chill people or why people thought about things certain ways or why people were okay with some things not being perfect. Mm-hmm. I was like, how can you accept this?
Oh, and, man.
You know, now that I have a little context, it makes more sense.
I am a very competitive person. I'm very feisty. And I'm also a perfectionist. And those three things are things that I am constantly working on because you can get so caught up in trying to be perfect and trying to have everything be perfect that you burn yourself out completely by the end of it. And being competitive, sometimes it is a disservice to the way that I look at things, because I may look at something that's not a competition, but treat it like a competition. And that's not okay. So those are things I'm constantly like keeping in my head, like, no, this is not a competition. You just do things and it's okay. You don't have to be the best or be perfect.
Yeah.
But that drive is there. And so trying to tamper it down is hard because so I allow myself, I have trivia, I do pub trivia every week, and that's my okay, I want to win, let's be competitive, let's do this.
See, my first job was all competitive because I worked at a TV station, so you had to be first. You had to have the most information. You had to have the right lead at the 6 o'clock show, and the other stations didn't have that, or they had this interview and you didn't, and then you're in trouble because you didn't get that exclusive interview. So my current job isn't that way, but sometimes I feel like I'm still in that mode, like, okay, I still have to have, because I'm still in a news sort of business, that I still have to have the news before everybody else has it. So I get the whole competitive thing, and that's why I'm still like, oh, I gotta compete.
But you don't.
But I'm not competing against myself, really. You know?
You don't.
So
you don't.
Yeah.
You have to stop it. You're like, yeah. It's hard. Especially if that's your mindset. It's really hard to get out of that mindset. I think some of my jobs that I've done have been good, and some of the places I've worked haven't been as good, but I learned something from everywhere, and I take those skills and that mindset wherever I go. And I sometimes it takes time. I know some people luck into it and they get into a company where they're just happy and that's where they are. Like, they don't change. For me, that wasn't how it worked. But I think knowing and looking at it as a learning experience and personal growth is really, really healthy.
Yeah. One of the great things about being in college is being surrounded by more spontaneous people and learning that that's okay sometimes. You don't have to plan out every minute of a trip.
Nope. You
do. Sometimes it's worse than you do.
Yeah.
So where are, what, remind people, what year are you now in college?
I'm in the middle of my senior year, so I graduate in December.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, then we'll have you on in December to congratulate you. We'll throw a little like podcast party.
Yeah.
So you could, when you're talking about being spontaneous, you're a senior. So the senioritis, that spontaneousness, that's all you right now, right?
I mean, my mindset going to this semester is just to do everything that I'm never going to have the chance to again. And it's like in the past semesters, you know, my friends and I sometimes will talk about doing things or making plans, going somewhere. And we'll be like, yeah, that sounds fun, but it's probably easier to just hang out in the dorm right now and just chill.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just end up chilling for the night, watching TV or watching TV shows or just playing board games or doing random things. And I think this semester, I think I want to be a little bit more proactive about just doing it. Like, why not?
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, budget things out and, you know, make an hour by hour, play by play kind of thing. Just do it. Just roll with it.
Yeah.
Just gonna have all these collect experiences this last semester.
Okay. They tell you this. They say, this is the best time of your life. You're not going to have this time again. You won't have this freedom again. Do it now. But I don't know that you really get it until you're in the working world and things are paid time off you have to accrue.
Yeah.
And you can't just pick up and go when you want. It's a much different environment. So
You don't appreciate it until it's gone. I mean, I think that's everyone with their childhoods. Everyone's going to have childhood nostalgia around that.
Yeah.
For me, I have a really strong sense of that with the 2022 summer touring season when you know everyone retired and we all went on tour with Stars and Ice Japan, Stars and Ice US. We went back to Japan in August for more tours. I mean, that was the best summer of my life. And I knew it was a good summer while it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I just somehow wish I could go back and tell myself to enjoy it twice as much if that's possible.
Yeah.
Is it really, I mean, unless I somehow get lucky and I'm able to, you know, take a step back from whatever professional career I pursue and start touring again, like unless that happens, you know, not really going to be able to experience that again.
Yeah.
And even if I do, you know, maybe I have maybe at that time I have a mortgage to pay off or a car loan to worry about.
Yeah.
It's
adulting.
Yep. Yeah.
It's.
And see, I never understood why people wanted to rush through college either. I get the work and the schoolwork and stuff, but then, you know, it's like as soon as you're out of there, mm-hmm. then you're an adult now. And like, but people wanted to get it done in 3 years. I'm like, no, stay another year.
The other expectations start. It's like, okay, now you're an adult. You've got to get a job and buy a house and do this. There's just, I wish I could.
I'd go back in a heartbeat to college without the schoolwork. you know, I could get away, you know, not have that, but I'd go back in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some saying about this very thing. I know there's some sort of saying. It's like too young to understand, too old to something, something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a changing world. So are you excited for the next step?
Yeah, I'm going back to New York. So.
Oh, okay.
I was in New York this past summer, going back to New York at the end of next summer. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. But in the meantime, you know, hoping to, you know, after I graduate, before I start working, maybe go to nationals, maybe, you know, attend some more skating events while I still have the time. And, you know, Olympic seasons.
It's
super exciting.
It is really exciting. We've been pacing ourselves all summer, like, okay, this is the first time that we've had the podcast going that it's been an Olympic season. And it's different because there's just more going all the time. There's always news, right, and everybody, the listeners and fans want to know what's happening all the time. It's like there's even more scrutiny than usual. And Gina actually, we've talked about this before, fan expectation. I don't know if you ever ran into this, but I'll let Gina explain it.
Okay.
So this is right now. I mean, we do have competitions going with the JGP. Challengers are starting up. But this right now, in the past, maybe all summer long, fans are just wanting information like now. Like, skaters have to announce programs. We need to know what they're skating to. And some haven't announced programs yet. Some have and are giving like these little snippets of their program. And people are already making judgments based on, well, we haven't heard what they're doing yet, so we don't know what they're doing. Or, oh, that program, really? They're doing that program? And, oh, and so far it doesn't look good. Do you ever remember like this, especially going into the Olympic season where fans are such in demand for this stuff and this early are already making judgments based on what, you know, skaters are putting out there in August?
I think every skater's team might have a slightly different strategy, so I can't speak for everyone, but I think my team and I, we definitely took into account, you know, what early screenings or whatever, how the reception was, but in general, making a program is a huge commitment, and it's like, it's really hard to switch it out for a different one. You could always go back to an old program, but again, you've already sunk so much time and effort into making this program, and you haven't even seen it through yet. You've hardly given it a chance to bud and nourish it and let it become something special. Sometimes it's special off the start. You can't expect to recreate that magic every season. You know, it's kind of like there's some sort of law that that states that it says something about deviations reverting back to the mean, tendency to revert to the mean. And it's like, you can't expect magic to happen at the very start of every single season. Realistically, there's going to be some hits and misses. But the one thing that you can trust is that with effort, with proactive effort, conscious integration of feedback, well-established feedback loops from sources that matter regarding your program and your choreography, if you put all of that in, you can trust that through that almost like scientific process, it will turn into something much more special by the end of the season, if it isn't already at the start of the season. Yeah. I think that like,
but yeah, it takes time sometimes for that and a little bit of mileage under the program. Right. I remember last season when Olivia and Tim debuted Dune, the costumes were more a different color and people didn't seem super jazzed about it. But by the end of the season, they were on board with it. It was much more popular. I think you have to be patient. And for some reason, especially this season, I feel like patience is not there. And maybe we just all need a little patience.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I want to keep saying, it's August, it's beginning of September here, you know, calm down. But I get why fans want to see these things, but a program that maybe is a few seconds that a skater's putting on, you know, Instagram or on TikTok, is not the same program we're going to see in February and March. Yeah. And I've always been one that says, I have to see it a couple of times before I can even make judgment if they're going to say that's a masterpiece or that's, you know, outstanding or whatever. And sometimes it's going to be, I need to see it in person. And so, you know, I've been seeing clips of, you know, Junhwa Cha's programs are out there, and we got to see some of the programs with the Summer Sizzler. And, you know, then people are already making judgments based on this early show in these little clips that are getting thrown out there. And it's like, wait, guys, wait.
Just wait.
Wait a bit, yeah. You know?
It's like some movie trailers are just really bad and don't do the movie justice.
Oh, they don't.
Or it's like I mean, I guess it's a little different with movies because it's not like the director gets or the producer gets to change the movie and change how it's filmed or how that what the actors do like after it's already released, right. After it's already
right.
But to a certain extent, you know, it's like I guess you compare it to, you know, judging a movie off of an extremely rough draft, that a rough cut or something, you know. Like, it's not entirely fair. But then again, that doesn't exclude the possibility that sometimes it's just a miss. Sometimes it's just a miss. And I think I think it's really important for teams to get feedback from unbiased external sources. I've had bad programs, like I've had objectively bad programs where people who are, you know, maybe more invested in my success, people who are part of my team, looked at it and they were like, oh it's good. And I was like, and looking back now, it's like, are you saying that because you're on my team and you want it to be good, you want it to be successful, is that why you're saying it is, hoping it's a self-fulfilling prophecy? Because like in reality, from a third person perspective, it's just outright bad.
Now, did you ever announce your programs like on social media?
Yeah.
Or post videos like that?
Yeah. I mean, generally, I didn't really pay too much attention to that kind of stuff. I just announced it more as like an obligation. I've never really been super in tune with how to use social media in the best way, I guess. But
that's how I feel, Vincent. That's how I feel. I do okay with it, but not my favorite.
I think
thing.
Some skaters definitely are more savvy with that, and they have a better sense of how certain things will be appreciated by their audience. Sometimes it goes through the choreographer. The choreographer is the one posting about it. But you know. Getting external feedback is super important. So it can come from.
You have to trust the people around you too, to be honest with you.
Right.
You do.
Right.
But you also, like you said, it's like editing a paper. You've looked at the paper 35 times, but you've missed 5 typos because you just don't see them anymore because you've edited it so much. So sometimes you need a different perspective from someone who hasn't seen it that many times, who can say, you know what? It's great, but this. Or is willing to be honest and not just be like, oh yeah, it's wonderful. Is it?
Yeah. I mean, like as the author of the paper, you get attached to certain sentences or certain phrases because you have a certain concept in your head that you're trying to express concisely, but you don't have the space to, you know, to give a whole author's note in front of every sentence. Then someone else reading the paper, even if they're approaching it from a similar academic standpoint as you or a similar angle as you, they don't have the exact same, you know, context that you do. They may be sort of placing their own lens onto it.
I think
that's how a lot of things are in life. You're looking at the same issue through different lenses, and you know,
yeah,
and it results in different interpretations, and it's necessary to hear the other side.
Yeah, it is. So, it is. Sometimes you can make it better. You have to let it cook. Let it cook.
Yeah,
that's what Anne used to say. What she had to use a saying about something
percolating. Like she needed to let.
Oh yes, she had to let it percolate overnight
just to make sure. I do that too with articles and things.
Yeah.
Oh, I do that for work with every article.
I
do.
I got to let it sit overnight then I'll reread it and see where we're at, because otherwise I've already read it too many times and it doesn't work anymore.
So speaking of program announcements, I haven't been following too closely. Just, you know, sometimes I see things on Instagram.
Did you know Olivia and Tim, for their free dance this year, they're doing the Dune 2 soundtrack?
Oh my God. Yes.
My reaction as well. Yes.
That makes me so happy. I mean, their free skate at Worlds was just, I mean,
yeah,
come on. It was incredible.
Yeah.
I really hope they use, I don't know what exact pieces from the score they're going to use, but I really hope they use, what's the title? Kiss the Ring or a time of peace and something, a time of quiet in between the storms. Those are really good. I really hope they use those.
I'm excited that they're going to go there, because in dance, it's very, in singles and pairs, people reuse programs from year to year. In ice dance, that doesn't happen. There is a different, and I'm not sure why, pressure to create something new every year. And so I like that Olivia and Tim are kind of skirting around that by not using the same program, but doing like a continuation in some way.
Yeah. And I love that. Yeah. Love that. I wish people would do it more. If it works for you, then keep telling the story. If it, if it works, you leverage that.
Yeah. I think so too.
I mean, I think there was a year, it might've been Dennis Ten's most successful season, but he skated to the artist, different parts for both his short and free skate. Yeah. So
if it works,
yeah.
Right.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
And this season, I am seeing that a lot of people are using, going back to old programs.
Yes.
I don't know if that is, you know, common in an Olympic season, like just getting one new program in an Olympic season and sticking with something that has worked. But yeah, it's a lot this season. Yeah. I'm seeing, we're going back to last year's program, or we're going back to a program from two or three seasons ago.
Yeah.
Which is,
I talked to someone, I guess I shouldn't spoil it. I don't know if they've announced yet, or if they plan to, or if this was even their final decision, but there's a high profile skater. I talked to their team, and there was a highly acclaimed program last season, that they're going to kind of do sort of a thematic continuation of.
I like that. I like the idea.
So yeah, like if it works for you, just keep owning that.
Yeah.
Whether it's reusing the program or whether it's doing a continuation, like, own that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's okay to do that, especially if you have a program that is special to you or stands out, you had success with. Why not bring it back? I've wanted that kind of for ice dance, because I feel like because they don't reuse programs, in that quadrennial or whatever, you're coming out with programs every year. What if your Olympic free dance you do in like the second year of the quad? It's like,
Yeah.
Oh, bring it back, you know?
Right.
Well, that was why I always thought Maddie and Evan were going to bring back the snake. And we never saw the snake at the Olympics. They stuck with the theme of her being a character and him being a character for a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know what it is with you ice dancers. I'm just going to say you're Daphne, you're an ice dancer and keeping the same program. Like,
well, thank you. I mean, my skating skills were never that good, but I appreciate it.
I have a question for him. Okay. We have some skaters that are coming out of retirement and skating this season.
Right.
Some that you competed with or competed, you know, you weren't against them per se, but they were your teammates at an Olympics. What are your thoughts on, you know, skaters making a return to competitive skating?
Can you remind me? Do you have like a list of names?
Well, we've got the Shibutanis are coming back after 7 years. Keegan Messing is coming back. Sui and Han, we're hearing they're coming back as well.
Oh, I know, right?
Oh, jeez. I had the chance to.
Are you announcing you're coming back too?
No. I know, Gina. No. We are not going there because Vincent told us he's not coming back. I know this.
I had the chance to watch Sui and Han train in Toronto once when we were both there getting our free skates done by Lori Nicole, greatest choreographer on the planet. Shout out, Lori. And let me tell you, watching them skate in person is just something else. Their speed, the distance that their throws cover, their lack of hesitation, their fearlessness, their attack and everything, the camera doesn't do it justice. The camera really doesn't do it justice. Like watching them train their Tarando program was one of the most inspiring, emotional things I've ever seen in my life. And that was just in practice at the start of the season.
I would totally agree. I think you have to see them in person. I think they come across fine on TV, but the intensity is like amplified.
Yeah. I mean,
when you see them in person.
They're like the same height. Okay. Talk about aura. Like the guy's just, the guy's just like, he's the same height as her. And he's just like,
yep.
You know, like it's another day in the office. And like the throws, I mean, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it, but it's just absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
So if they are returning, extremely excited for that. Keegan, I mean, he's a great showman and he's, you know, I know people absolutely love how entertaining he is. Good for him, like longevity in the sport, right? We love to see it. And Shibutani's, I mean, I remember watching them for the first time or watching them like break through sort of the invisible political barrier the first time in 2016 with their Coldplay, with their Fix You free dance. Saw that live at Nationals. And there was just something special in the air. Something about the way their twizzles were right on the music as it was building, and something about their ending position with them like going like this, like hand in, like arm in arm, you know, side by side, like taking up the space at the end of the program, as opposed to the normal dance ending positions, which are often like, you know, the girl falls into the guy's arms and is happy thereafter. Like this was different, and it was special in its own way. And that was just one of my core memories of skating during that time. And I'm really happy that they're coming back on their own terms and continuing to, you know, they're coming back to something that they started, which was, you know, sibling, making sibling dance teams more mainstream and breaking out of sort of the glass ceiling and the stigma around that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of like, you have to tell a love story. The judges want to see a love story.
No, you don't.
There's so many better stories.
There are so many stories that are not love stories.
Well, I don't want to say there's so many better stories. There's nothing better than a great love story.
Right.
But there are so many other equally good stories to be told.
Yeah. There are a lot of options out there. There are a lot of different stories you can tell without it being a romantic story.
Right.
And for a long time, sibling teams did not break through. Like, dance is very tricky. Mm-hmm. You don't see the shifting and moving like you do in other disciplines. It's much more smaller incremental things. Although Olivia and Tim finishing third in the free dance at Worlds, that was a huge step forward in dance, because those things don't happen. It's just not common. And I've been watching dance for over 25 years, and those things don't happen. They just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of Olivia and Tim, I've always thought they had something special. Well, I think, okay, so when Olivia was still with
Adrian
Diaz.
Yeah.
When they skated to Mask of Zorro, I forgot what year that was.
That was 2022. That was their last season together. Yeah.
Right. And I think I saw that program at a Grand Prix, and it was like, I don't remember them getting rewarded appropriately for their performance, but I thought it was the best performance of the night. Like I think that Olivia does an incredible job with her programs, and I'm really happy that she was able to, you know, break out of that glass ceiling with Tim and finally land a third in the free dance. Maybe should have been higher, but I mean, Piper and Paul and Maddie and Evan are also, you know, just incredible in their own right. So, you know,
it's so competitive, and there's so much, there's only so much you can do.
Right.
But that was a huge breakthrough for them to be third in the free dance, and what that means for them this season, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean,
really exciting.
Huge because the year before they qualified for the free dance, but they were not, they did finish near the lower, down near like fifth, maybe even 18, 19, 20 in there.
Yeah.
To go from there to like sixth in the world, those things don't happen either. But they really improved. Yeah. Sometimes that first season is like, it's so hard to, you're gelling, you're trying to be, to, you have to figure out where you're starting from, and you're coming together and finding what works and what programs work for you. And that first season is often difficult, I would say. Mm-hmm. But then after that, you get to see, and I hope that they will continue the next 4 years, because I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, they've come so far in such a short time, and I think that is in large part a function of there's something special there.
Yeah.
It was there with Dune, it's continuing.
Yeah.
And I hope they have the medium to let it develop.
Yeah.
And the other part is, maybe it's a small sign, hopefully, that judging is starting to come around a little bit. Although, I don't know, you could probably easily find as many counterexamples as there are positive examples. But I really think judging has been too subjective for so long, too political. Like, skaters don't get the component scores they deserve, and it's caused a lot of people to go underappreciated for way too long.
Yeah. I think that's why it's good when we see fans gravitating towards someone who might not be in the top, because then there is some attention brought to skaters that are not.
Right.
I mean, Gina and I, with the podcast, and Mateo, we're not always interviewing the skaters at the top. We interview lots of different people, and it's not, the timing sometimes needs to be right, and that's why we reach out. But I think everyone has a story, And sometimes the most interesting stories don't come from the skaters who are at the top. It comes from mm-hmm. someone else. And so being, you know, paying attention, listening, learning what's going on in the sport, that's how, you know, we like to tell stories. That's, I mean, we do our weekly, but we also like to tell stories.
I mean, I think one example of someone who went underappreciated for way too long was Misha G. He started getting recognition after he was able to start delivering like season. It took like five seasons or something of him doing clean programs repeatedly every single time to start getting the scores he deserved. But I remember I watched him for the first time at Golden West Championships in Culver City, California in 2008. And this old rink, I don't think it's operational anymore. It's such an old rink. The ice quality was so bad. But this guy was ripping his step sequence like you've never seen. Like, it was like 2000s Plushenko or Yagudin-inspired step sequences. And he just put everything into his performance. And he had the skating skills to back it up. That's the thing. That's another thing. There's some nuance. Sometimes skaters are popular because they have really fun choreography, super inspired programs. They're very artistically inspired, but they don't necessarily have the skating skills to back it up. And so sometimes, you know, I see people talking about like, oh, you know, the skater should receive higher component scores. And I'm like, but if you actually like, if you actually know like skating skills and stuff, it's somewhat not as justified as you might think. But then like Misha G was one of those skaters who was extremely artistically inspired, delivered performances like I've never seen anyone else in the world do before. And he had the skating skills to back it up. And it still took him like so many seasons, so many years. It wasn't until like 2019 or something that he started, like 11 years after, you know, I first saw him in 2008, that he started, you know, achieving his career best results.
Yeah.
And basically like the same level of technical content and the same level of delivery. Like he put just as much into it and all throughout all of those 11 years.
Yeah. So he had a huge fan base also. Fans really gravitated towards him right away, I think. And he's gone on to like do choreography now. He's a sought after choreographer. Mm-hmm. People want that magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he did my free skate in 2020, the pandemic year. And that's still like, this is one of my regrets. I was never able to do that program justice. Never able to. It was Algorithm by Muse. And he had a vision for the program. I loved the music from the start. I was just never able to do the program justice. And I do regret that. I sometimes think about coming back and skating to it again so I can do it better this time. But I have so much respect for him as a former athlete, as an artist, and now as a choreographer. Like he is extremely special. He's extremely special. I hope more top skaters get the chance to be the medium for his artistic genius.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's Lori Nicole. I know that I think she's a little more selective with who she works with, but she has made one of the biggest impacts on my skating career of anybody. And she is such a soulful person. She has such a unique vision. She incorporates so many different sensory feelings and descriptors into how she conveys her vision for her choreography. And it's right now, I think her best vessel is Yuma. Yuma's programs have been just genius, and he delivers them so well too. Like I enjoyed watching his Imagine Dragons program like a ridiculous amount, and his like I don't know what the name is, but his like Spanish dance, you know, the one I'm talking about, like with, that one was also just delivered so, so well. So I'm really excited to see what he does this season too.
He's doing Toronto.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Lori loves Toronto.
So there's video out there, Vincent, and it's been well received by fans so far. Like,
okay,
people are on board with it.
This is going to be good.
Others have been saying, eh, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. That's why I was saying it's only August, it's September. That program is going to be a masterpiece come February.
It is.
The Olympics.
It's been done a lot, but Lori Nicole isn't anyone. And Yuma Kageyama isn't anyone.
Right.
It's just like, it's going to be good. Lori, I know how much Lori loves Torando because she had me speak to it too.
I was going to say, when you mentioned that earlier, I was thinking, oh boy, if we talk about Yuma. Yeah, Yuma is doing it this year. I think it's definitely, from what I've seen, because I watched the video, it's going to be something by the time we get to the Olympics.
Lori has what it takes to create the most special Torando ever, and Yuma has what it takes to perform the most special Torando ever. Maybe some of the diehard, you know, fans of certain Torandos can fight me on this, but but you know, if things play out well for Yuma, it will be really special. So really excited.
We're really excited to see how that grows through the season, because programs, as we talked about, change so much during the year. That's why I love for ice dance going to Lake Placid and seeing things so early, and then seeing them at nationals, it's like, okay, you know, wow, look at how this went from here to here. And man, I love it. You know, I think it's so exciting to see where something starts and where it ends up.
Yeah.
And I don't expect I don't expect it to be fantastic in July.
Right.
Right.
You don't want to peak in July.
I saw that Kevin Amos just announced a Lady Gaga program. So that's going to be.
And he killed it today at French Masters.
I didn't even see it, but I'm sure he did.
Yeah, he did really well in the short program at French Masters. Free skate hasn't happened yet. But yeah, it's a good program.
I need to see what song he's skating to. I have to. I did not know it was Lady Gaga, and now
I think it was Judas.
Is it Judas? Oh yes, I love that one.
Yeah,
live reaction, guys. Live reaction.
I love that one. I love that song. It's so fun.
I saw him for the first time at the Grand Prix in Grenoble in 2017, which. Don't ever go back and watch my performance there. It's one of the worst skates I've had in my life. But aside from that, he hadn't, you know, broken out yet. He hadn't like made a name for himself yet. But that year, his free skate was Run Boy Run by Woodkid.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was the first time I'd heard someone skate to that. It's been used a lot since then.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I heard someone skate to that. And the way he performed it was just something special. Like I saw that and I was like, he's going to be something. Like he's going places. And it, you know, he definitely had like the home crowd factor going too. Like the audience was super into it, but I mean, like he was like almost animalistic with how passionately he performed it. And if you can see that coming through in a skater, you know, there's something special with them. So really excited. It's been really great that he's been super unafraid to let his personality shine through in his programs and how he carries himself. And I hope he continues doing that.
Yeah. He's very emotional skater. And I know, he gets emotional in Kiss and Cry, but on the ice with what he puts into the performance, it just seems very emotional and heartfelt. Yeah. At least
it's deserved.
Yeah.
It feels deserved.
Yeah.
Sometimes when someone wins something or does incredible or something, you almost wish they would celebrate more, or know, get more about it. And then you see them just like, you see them just like nonchalantly walking off, and it's almost disappointing in a way.
When he does well,
you know.
He does well.
2023 World's Free Skate. I mean, I don't remember what the music was. It was like the brown costumes with like the short cut off sleeves. I think there was something with like a bow and arrow, I think.
He did Gladiator at the Olympics in 2022.
Yeah, I don't remember what the music was, but he skated clean at Worlds. I think it was 2023. And, you know, the emotions after, just even for anyone watching, imagine being him.
I can't. Well, he is bringing back Bolero, which he did a couple of years ago. That's going to be his free skate.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see that.
I hope that the Olympic competition is just a good competition. Like, I hope it's not a, I hope everyone get, I mean, you know, we talked about like reversion to the mean, the statistic tendency towards the mean, but I really hope that everyone gets the competition they deserve. Mm-hmm. And I really hope we get to see people's dreams fulfilled. I mean, that's what we love about the sport. Yeah. It gives everyone to have that emotional culmination at the end of the season. I fingers crossed that people's seasons play out well.
I am hoping that is the case. I'm hoping for a fair Olympics, that things are judged for what they are on the ice.
Yes.
I'm hoping that there will be a lack of drama with regard to that piece of it. I hope that the only drama is what's performed in a dramatic performance on the ice. I don't want to see anything else.
Yes.
Because I think the skaters deserve.
Skaters deserve that.
Clean and fair.
A clean and fair Olympics.
Clean and fair. Yep.
Isn't Russia sending one each in singles?
Yes, because the names of the skaters they submitted for dance in pairs did not pass.
It's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah. Qualifying competition.
Are they, do you know if they're allowed in the ISU events leading up to the Olympics or just the Olympics?
The qualifier.
Just the Olympic qualifier in Beijing.
Just the qualifier.
Yeah, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see how the Russian athletes are judged at the qualifier.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they haven't...
And that's only a couple weeks from now.
I can't believe that it's only a couple of weeks from now, but it is only a couple of weeks from now. And those last...
I don't know what kind of shape they're in. I don't know what kind of shape they're in, but... Yeah. If they're in like good competitive shape, then Lord of Mercy.
I know. Let's just hope. Yeah.
We're hoping for a drama-free season. Yes. There's some loose threads that have yet to be wrapped up.
Yes.
But let's hope that things go as smoothly as it can be.
Yes, agreed.
Yes.
Agreed, 100%. So before we close out, Vincent, what would you say were the biggest differences between your I'm not going to say Olympics, because we've talked about the Olympics, like 2018, 2022. Your seasons, like what were the biggest things going, you know, or differences between those two seasons as a whole? Like, not the Olympic experience, because we've already talked about that.
The 2018 season was, okay, so the biggest difference was the sort of point in my career trajectory I was at. 2018 was my first season as an international. That was the breakout season, as an international senior. So that was like my freshman senior season. I had been a junior prior, done JGPs, won the World Junior Championships. So I had momentum, but it was still a very long shot to even think about being like final Olympic group material, mm-hmm. you know? So that would be like looking at, you know, someone like Adam Hagara or Jacob Sanchez or even like Ryo Nakata, I guess. That would be perhaps be a more apt comparison. Mm-hmm. But like it would be a really tough ask to, and I mean, Ryo is an incredible skater. Like he's much further along, like in the components department than I was in my inaugural Olympic season. But like it would still be like a big ask to expect him to, number one, get the Federation's approval to go into the Olympics as a, you know, as a first year mm-hmm. senior international. And then on top of that, like, you know, make like top six or whatever. And so for me in 2018, that season was a huge uphill battle because I was like, okay, I'm not going to magically get a component score bump. I need to make up the point deficit somehow. So I got to learn quads. And that was, so in a sense, so that line of decision-making was what was number one responsible for ultimately me making the Olympic team and ending in top six, but also number two, for it did, you know, permanently alter the trajectory of my career from a more like toe and toe development curve to suddenly my jumps are very far ahead. My artistry is not there yet. But at the same time, I'm not giving myself the time to let my perception develop. I'm here and I'm putting the pressure myself to maintain that like top six final group spot, when in reality that wasn't fair to myself, right? Like realistically, I would need to give it a few more years for the artistry to catch up. But I had willingly put myself in that position, and now it's on me to, now at that point it was on me to deal with the criticism that came along with it of like being a final group, like top whatever skater that didn't have good artistry. Like that criticism was very much warranted. And it was a result of this, the necessity of learning the quads so that I could make the Olympic team in that year. Because realistically, if I didn't make 2018, 2022 would be my only shot. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like, obviously if you have the shot, you have to take it. You have to take it. I mean, that was like the impossible, the timeline was almost felt impossible, right? Because it was my first year senior. Prior to that, I had done 2 years in the junior circuit. Prior to that, I had been injured for 2 years, almost quit skating. And so taking back to like 2013, I was 12 years old, just won the US national championships at the junior level. And that was like, Nathan Chen started out a couple years ahead of me, I think like 3 or 4 years ahead of me. And all the way throughout our childhoods, I'd always like really looked up to him. And I was like trying to play this catch up game. And that season, that 2012 to 2013, I know it sounds crazy, the 2012 to 2013 season, I did catch him.
I remember that. I remember that.
Then I got injured.
Yep.
I injured. I had knee surgery, and he kept on going. And when I came back to skating 2 years later, I had to play catch up all over again. And so the 2017 to 2018 season, he was already the clear favorite. I was still like this, you know, the sort of underdog, and you know, still having like my breakout year.
Yeah.
And the 2 years of being injured, where I almost quit skating, went through extremely traumatic and transformative experiences, and coming back to skating, the timeline almost felt impossible to make the 2018 Olympics. Because think about it, I was coming into 2015, my first year in the JGPs, on the JGP circuit. 2016 to 2017, my second year on the JGP circuit. And then 2017 to 2018, all of a sudden you go from that to Olympics. Like, it doesn't make sense, right? It doesn't make sense. So the entire season, I was trying to wrap my head around the dissonance between this is where I am realistically, and this is where I need to be if I want to realize this dream of making the Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the context for how monumental, how impossible the task of making the Olympic team felt like. And then if you remember, I mentioned the Grand Prix in Grenoble, right? Completely bombed. I felt like that was it. You know, that was the end of the dream. That was November 17th to 19th. I still remember the dates of the competition because it's so bad.
We always remember the bad things, right? We always
remember the good things too. You remember the good things too.
Yeah.
And on January like 8th, I'm supposed to go out and try to make the Olympic team. Like, the timeline doesn't work.
No.
You know?
No, but yet it did. And you did make the Olympic team.
There was some sort of magic that happened there. But in the 2018 US Championships, it was five men competing for three spots, right? Because it was Nathan, who's basically a given. Then there was Jason, Adam, Max Aaron, and myself.
Oh,
that's five.
Oh my gosh.
And then Ross Minor came in and got second.
Yeah.
That's when the whole body of work thing really started, where they were like,
Yes.
No, we're going to look across the spectrum of what people have accomplished.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because Ross and I were both examples of people who came in with sort of like no body of work, and we were counterexamples.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my case, it was a little bit different because I had the momentum. I had the junior world championships, the junior world champion thing going. And I had like the technical potential there for like a lot of very high scoring ceiling in the future. But it's the Olympics, right? Like you could give the same argument to Ilya in 2022, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't go in his favor. So it's kind of interesting there.
Yeah. So
it's just something of, like, I got so lucky. I got so lucky that year, so fortunate to have received that spot because I could see it going any one of like the six ways.
Yeah. No, it's true.
So, but at 12:31 a.m. I got the text message that said I was on the team, you aren't supposed to tell anyone until the next morning when it's officially announced, but I was hanging out with like other friends, other skaters, at the hotel because everyone was done and, you know, time to enjoy, time to celebrate and time to await the results. Right. And everyone knew that I was waiting. And when I got the text, obviously I couldn't hide it.
No, you can't. How do you hide it?
How? Yeah.
I didn't say anything. I just started like screaming. and then the entire room started screaming because everyone knew.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, that moment was just like, everything was worth it. Everything was worth it. You know, from the time I was 5 years old, stepping on the ice for the first time, everything was worth it. And then 1 month later, going to the Olympics and skating that free skate where I landed four out of my five quads, but aside from stepping out of the flip, was basically in program, but that was like the best program I had ever skated ever, like including in practice. And that was like, I saw red at the end of the program. Like it was just dream come true. Absolute dream come true. So to go from, you know, like only having just come back from a 2 year hiatus when I thought I was actually going to quit skating 3 years before that, like insane, you know.
It's wild because a lot of people mm-hmm. thought, I didn't think you were coming back. Everything had pointed to you being done, and so when you did come back, it was like, oh,
I didn't think I was coming back.
There's a surprise. Okay, let's see what happens now.
There's a very big what if of if I had never gotten had to deal with that injury in the aftermath, what if? But life is the way it is, and we made something great out of it still.
Yeah.
We made something
great,
so.
Yeah.
But so that was 2018. That was 2018, you know, it was like this, and once I got there, I was like, okay, I don't ever want to come down from this high. One month later, I did come down from that high. And then the 2019 season, I had to fight through a lot of issues with my own skating that came as a result of having done that well at the Olympics when, you know, in maybe a statistical average timeline that would never have happened. I had to deal with the aftermath of holding myself to those expectations and being perceived along those lines, but also not having everything to back it up yet. And so by the end of the 2019 season, going into the world, I was like, I need to prove to myself that I belong here. I'm going to medal. That's my goal. I know that it might be dependent on some top skaters not skating cleanly, but my goal is to medal, and that's a respectable goal. And you did medal. Okay. And people were like, haha, you're delusional, you can't do it. And I did it, you know? Mm-hmm. And like I made leaps and bounds of progress in terms of just the quality of my skating in 1 year. And I'll always be really proud of that. And then, so, you know, COVID disrupted everything, but 2022 season, that was supposed to be the year where everything, all the loose ends came together, you know, that was it. Like I'm going to college after that, you know, like I'm not competing anymore after that. Right. Like that was it. So it was do or die. And I had the whole season going like better than could have ever hoped for. You know, I remember the little game of catch up I was talking about with Nathan Chen, and then at 2021 Skate America, I finally felt like I had something to show for that. I finally felt like
you were back. Yeah.
Oh, I remember that event.
I started to feel like at the Olympics it would be possible to make a serious podium shot, and then the Olympics happened.
Yeah.
It's happened.
Vincent, I know we've said this on the podcast before. We all were feeling for you being where you were. I remember getting the news and just being brokenhearted for you. So I am glad that they awarded the team medals and you were able to be in Paris for those medals and get your medal.
Right. So.
And be forever known as an Olympic champion.
I know. Do you still? I could tell that still is like something, right? Like it still is something.
It's something for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. So 2018, 2022 seasons were completely different in terms of where I was at in my career trajectory and what I was expecting or not expecting out of each event. So, but you know, even though the 2022 Olympics didn't go the way anybody planned in a multitude of ways,
yeah,
I had the 2022 World Championships, and that, I mean, we've already talked about that before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that was like, I didn't get my Olympics, you know, bookend. So World Championships was the last shot. And after that, it was truly done.
Mm-hmm.
So Worlds was like my personal individual Olympics in terms of how the result feels like.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I know that, like, you know, Hanyu wasn't there, Nathan wasn't there. But at the same time, you know, even though the competition level was a little bit lower. So was mine. So maybe if you think about it as a video game, it averages out. because I didn't train for 6 weeks going into, I did Worlds without six weeks of no.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And being on the verge of severe depression, you know, I think that more than levels the playing field.
I think so. I think it's a huge accomplishment.
If you kind of run with my concept of this as like a simulation, mm-hmm. or like a video game almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it sounds a little silly.
No.
But in terms of how it played out, that was the fairy tale ending. So, man, the story never gets old.
No, it doesn't.
No.
And so, Vincent, we so appreciate you coming back on the podcast to talk with us. And we will have you back again.
Once you graduate.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have a graduation party. But we wish you the very best in your last semester at Brown.
Yes.
Thank you so much. It's going to be a great remaining portion of the year, and hopefully we're going to go into 2026 with everyone's storylines culminating in something wonderful at the Olympics. Fingers crossed.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Week in Skating. Remember, you can keep up with us throughout the week by visiting our website at www.thisweekinskating.com. Connect with us on social media for additional updates. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Skating without the E's, or Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at This Week in Skating. You got a burning question or feedback for Gina, Daphne, or Mateo? Reach out to us via social media or drop us an email at thisweekinskating@gmail.com. And if you're really enjoying the show and want to support us further, consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. Until next time, have a nice week.